morning. Today we'll cover, hopefully, with Hashem, some important halacha l'maisa topics regarding Pesach, from the aspect of the chametz aspect of Pesach and from the positive mitzvahs that we do at the Seder. The first part is Bedikas Chametz. We know that there is a requirement to get rid of our chametz before Pesach. Many people have the minhag of selling their chametz before Pesach, and that is a simple way of getting rid of chametz, which many people do, and if that's what you've been accustomed to do, then you certainly can continue. However, for individuals, especially those that have apartments here in the Heights that perhaps don't have so much chametz, the preferable way is to get rid of chametz before Pesach, not to keep chametz in your house and sell it, but the real minhag of mechiras chametz was said for individuals who are going to have a huge monetary loss as a result of throwing out chametz. And therefore, you know, stores and factories and people who have a lot of chametz perhaps in their homes. But the preferred way, and even if you don't do it this year, it's good to know for the future, is to diminish your chametz as you proceed towards Pesach. So when Pesach comes, you won't have so much chametz, and then you actually can get rid of the chametz. Because that's the real intent of the Torah, is not selling chametz, but ridding yourself of the chametz. Because the whole idea of mechiras chametz is it's a bit of a harama, it's a legal loophole, which many can question whether it is the proper thing to do, especially everyone has in mind that they're buying it back, and do we really have full intent that we're really selling it? Because if we really were selling it, are we really going to sell that, knowing that we're not going to get it back? The whole mechiras chametz is not a, you know, is something that one can question. And I urge people, even if they're not ready yet, in the future in their lives, to minimize the selling of chametz. And you should realize that that's not the intent of the Torah. The intent of the Torah really is to rid yourself of the chametz. Again, if one owns a big store, a big factory, and he's going to have a major monetary loss, so then there's what to say for that. But especially people who have apartments here in the Heights, and it's just a question of a couple of boxes of noodles and things like that, so the proper way is to rid yourself of the chametz. People think it's Bal Tashkis. It's not Bal Tashkis. The Torah says on Pesach comes, you should rid yourself of chametz. People feel so bad. I have a good box of noodles, but to throw it away is a Bal Tashkis. So it's really not a Bal Tashkis. That's the intent of what the Torah is trying to teach us. And somehow this idea of mechiras chametz became a little bit abused. So the more we can minimize the concept of the chametz that we sell, the better we are. Okay, the mitzvah, therefore, of getting rid of chametz starts with the bedikas chametz, which is the mitzvah that we do the night before Erev Chametz, the Erev Pesach. And the Shulchan Aruch says, number one, B'tchilus mel yidal b'nisim bokim es ha-chametz l'or ha-ner, b'chorin u'v'stokim. That we check chametz with the or ha-ner. Today, one doesn't have to use fire. One shouldn't use fire. One should use a flashlight, because that's the safest way. You shouldn't even bring any candle into the whole equation. You're only looking for trouble if you really use fire. Chorin Mustakim, literally means the holes and the cracks. Now, we don't really have these holes and cracks today. You see, the holes and the concept of holes and cracks is when before they had a concept of closets. So they would have holes in the wall where they would store their food. We don't have holes in the wall. We don't have cracks. We have closets. So, and we look for chametz in the closets. The chametz that we're looking for is not these little crumbs. We're not looking for to find a little crumb in the corner of the kitchen. That's not what we're looking for in Bedikas Chametz. In Bedikas Chametz, we're looking for big pieces of chametz. If you forgot to put a bag of shalach manos that you kept in the closet, or a humantashen, or something like that, big pieces of chametz. Of course, you don't want to have crumbs in the kitchen where you're cooking because it could fall into the food. And that for sure you don't want to have. But when you're looking around, so you're looking around for major pieces of chametz, and that's what you're trying to rid yourself of. In other words, you don't have to go crazy trying to find a little crumb someplace. That's not what you're looking for. And the halacha is of bedikas chametz is only in the rooms that you bring chametz to. The first Mishnah says in Maseches Pesachim, kol makom shein machnisim bo chametz ein tzarech bedika. That wherever you bring chametz to, is that's where you need bedika. A place where you never bring chametz in. If you never bring chametz into your bedroom, then that's not part of where bedika's chametz has to be. If you have little children in the house where they're constantly bringing chametz all over, so then every house, every room in the house could be a makom shemachnisim bo chametz. But the general rule is that whenever there is a place where you're bringing chametz in a regular basis, that's where you have to do the bedika. Then the Shulchan Aruch said, number two, kodim shiyaskei lidol yivarach hashekev shon mitzvot tzivanu al biur chametz. You should make a bracha before you do it. Now this is only if you're doing bedikas chametz the night before Erev Pesach. As we'll see in number 5, the Shulchan Aruch says, "A mefarsh liyamoshal yama yotzik u'shayara, beinu manich bebeisu mishivdov kol shloshim yom zokot livdov." The halacha is that bedikas chametz, even if you're leaving your house before Pesach, within 30 days of Pesach, you have to be bodek chametz the night before you leave. So if somebody has an apartment or their own house and they're going to Florida or wherever they're going, they have to do bedikas chametz the night before they leave, but our practice is not to do it with a bracha. You only do it with a bracha when you're doing bedikas chametz on the night of bedikas chametz, namely the night before Erev Pesach. And then after the bedika, we know on number 4, achar bedika miyad b'layil yindat lenu, we say the kol chamira. We do the bittul chametz, which is a nullification of the chametz. We do one at night, and then we do another one in the daytime. And you should look in the Haggadahs and the Sidurim. And if you don't understand the Aramaic words, you should do it in English, because bittul chametz is imperative to understand what you're saying. That you're not just saying some type of prayer, you're nullifying your chametz. So you should read it in English if you don't understand the Hebrew, or you can do it in both, but at least you should do it in a time that you, in a language that you understand. Okay, chametz is a unique type of halacha, that's, as we mentioned before, most things that we can't eat, trace food, etc., we're not prohibited of by owning that food. We're only permitted from eating it sometimes, from benefiting from it. But here, the Torah said that since you're so used to having chametz, the Mefarshim explained, since you're so used to having chametz around your house, so you might come to eat it if you're gonna keep it around your house. So that's why the Torah says that not only you shouldn't eat the chametz or benefit from the chametz, you shouldn't even own the chametz. So as we said before, the best way of not owning it is just getting rid of it. That's the real intent of the Torah. In situations where there's going to be a major financial loss, so then one could rely on selling the chametz. But the intent of the Torah is that one shouldn't own chametz. Now, in number 6, it says, "Me'enochai b'chmiyusha enochai v'vat bo afilum kolish tachas yodom." Tzarech lasos l'chonam mechitza galo yuzfachim. Meaning, if when you sell the chametz, or a non-Jew has chametz in your house, so there's still a problem. Because even though technically it's not your chametz, you sold the chametz, or it belongs to the guy, we're still afraid that you're going to come to eat. We're still afraid you're going to come to eat the chametz. So therefore, there has to be some type of barrier between you and the chametz. And the Gemara speaks about a mechitza. To put up a mechitza that is a partition that is 40 inches high. What does that mean? That means that you put the chametz in a closet and you lock you close the closet door. So that's the partition. In other words, you can't say, well, I'm going to sell the chametz to the guy and I'm going to just keep it on the side. There has to be a partition between yourself and the chametz, and the closet, the door, that is can serve as the partition. You just should maybe put a piece of tape on so you won't come to open the door to remind yourself that you can't go into that room. Normally, there is a halacha that's brought down in number 8 that hamotzi chametz v'beiso. So, if one finds chametz in his house in the middle of Pesach. So if it's on Chol HaMoed, he has to get rid of it right away. If it's Yontif, where he can't burn it on Yontif, so then he just covers it up, and then after Yontif, say in the first days, he finds the chametz in his closet, he finds a box of humantashen that weren't supposed to be there, so he should wait till after Yontif, and then he gets rid of it. So the question that the poskim discuss is today that if a person sells all the chametz in his house, so then some poskim are of the opinion that he can't get rid of that chametz because that chametz belongs to the guy. So therefore he would just go ahead and he would put it in the closet with the chametz that he sold. Because, and some point out that this halacha was talking about a person who doesn't sell chametz. If you don't sell chametz, or the chametz somehow you got it after Pesach, in the middle of Pesach, so it wasn't part of the sale, so then anything that's not part of the sale, so then you have to go ahead if you find it in the middle of Pesach. So if it's on Chol HaMoed, you have to get rid of it right away. If it's on Yontif, where you can't get rid of it right away, so then you just wait till after Yontif, and then you rid yourself of it. But again, if it was included in the sale, if you sold all the chametz in your house, so then the post can say, some post can say that you're not going to be, you shouldn't get rid of it because you sold that, and that's not yours to get rid of. It belongs to the guy, and therefore you'll just put it in the closet with the rest of the chametz. Number 9 begins the discussion of Heksha Kalim. So today in our society, most people have their own Pesach Kalim. Most people are not using kashering Kalim today. There are people still who are, but most of us have our separate set of dishes and separate set of cutlery for Pesach. What comes up are things like things that you don't have a separate, you don't have another sink, you don't have another counter, you don't have another oven. So what do you do with these things? So in terms of the oven, so if one has a self-cleaning oven, so certainly he puts it on the self-cleaning cycle, and then the oven is definitely kashered for Pesach. If you don't have a self-cleaning oven, then there are differences of opinions whether you could kasher it for Pesach or not. Some poskim say if you don't have a self-cleaning oven, then better not use it on Pesach. But there are many poskim that say that no, one can just put it up on a high temperature for half an hour or an hour, and that's the highest that oven ever got anyway, and therefore one could kasher the oven in that manner. So there's definitely what to rely on that opinion. And the difference being between the ovens in the time of the Talmud and the ovens of today is the ovens in the time of the Talmud, people actually put the food, the chametz, the dough, directly on the oven. So it touched the walls of the oven directly. So then it's more stringent of how you have to kasher it, and that would require the higher level of kashering, which only the self-cleaning oven could afford you, unless you have some type of blowtorch, which I wouldn't recommend you using. But today, the way we use ovens is we have trays, and we put things on the tray, so the food itself, the dough itself, is not actually touching the walls of the grates or the walls of the oven themselves. So therefore, it's only a question of the steam that the food emits. So therefore, that's a much more lenient type of situation. And therefore, many poskim say that as long as you put up the oven to the high number, and you keep it there for like a half an hour to an hour, then you've fulfilled the kashering of your oven. When it comes to so that is what the Shulchan Aruch talks about: things that you use with the ur, with the fire, and things that you use with water. Countertops, people have a minute to just pour hot water, you know, boiling hot water on their countertops and on their sinks. Some have the minute even to cover them. That is a prevalent minhag. It's not an absolute requirement, as long as, you know, because again, the countertops today also, we don't usually put the food directly on the, we don't put hot food directly on the countertop anyway. So, but for Pesach, we usually have many types of chumras that we engage in. So it became a chumra to pour hot water and to cover it up, etc. So if that is your minute, so continue that minute. But you should realize if you see someone who doesn't do that, you shouldn't think that he's not following halacha. That even if a person who doesn't pour the hot water or doesn't cover the countertops is still within the normative, and still within following halachic practice. You might have the minhag not to do that, to be, you know, to cover things up and to pour hot water, but these things are more chumras than absolute requirements. Okay, so that is the general, and in terms of the forks and things like that, most of you, I assume, they're not. I mean, I believe in Breuers and other places they have communal heksher kelim. So if you want to look for the signs for these things, it's always good to do it with rabbinic sanction if you have a lot of different kelim to kasher. But most people today in our society today have separate sets of cutlery, separate sets of dishes, and we don't have to get into that those details. The only things that we do are, as I said, the countertops, the sinks, and the ovens. So those are things that you don't necessarily have a spare one. So that's what we discussed. Let's look at number hey. So the halacha is that Chametz for Pesach is only forbidden if it's fit for human consumption. Things that are not fit for human consumption are not usher on Pesach, provided that it became non-fit before Pesach began. So once it was already not fit for consumption before Pesach, so then one could use it on Pesach. So for example, if one has shampoo, and even if the shampoo was made with wheat or something like that, but the shampoo is not fit for human consumption, so it's kosher l'Pesach. All shampoo is kosher l'Pesach. You don't have to get a special shampoo with a hechsher for, if it'll make you feel good to get one for, you know, that's another thing. But strictly speaking, you don't have to get any soaps, shampoos, and these things that are not fit for human consumption. So you could use them on Pesach even without any special hechsher, because they're all nifsal. They're all nifsal kodem haPesach. These are things that are used that you're not consuming. What about things that you're going to consume? What about medicines and vitamins and things like that? They're also not fit for human consumption. Because human consumption means it's a food. It's not. So when it comes to medicines, so again, if the medicine is easily, you can find a comparable thing that's not. So some people will like to, to make sure that they don't have any chashash, and they'll get something that's kosher l'Pesach. But technically speaking, medicines as well are considered nifsal me'achila, and they're not considered roy for achila, even though you intake them, but you don't intake them as a food. You take them as a medicine, and therefore, if one needs to use it on Pesach, it's permissible. Vitamins is more of a question. Vitamins, some poskim render vitamins as food items because they supplement what you're lacking in your diet. And so vitamins, some poskim are more machmir and say that vitamins you should try to get the kosher l'Pesach or kosher the whole year round vitamins. But there are many poskim to rely on that even by vitamins, who say that vitamins also have the status of medicine, and we don't view them as a food item either, and therefore, technically speaking, could be used without a hashkacha the year round and for Pesach, and that is the din of nifsal. Number six is the issur achilas chametz be'erev Pesach. One is not allowed to eat chametz. Only in the morning. You can look in the Yeshul bulletin. They'll give you the exact time of when you can't eat your chametz by, and you'll follow that time. And technically speaking, as far as the Torah is concerned, it's midday. In other words, midday you can eat chametz, and the rest of the day not. But chachamim forbade it for a couple of hours before. So you'll see on the calendar, it'll say the last time of when you could eat your chametz, and then you'll make sure to stop eating chametz by that time. I'm sure everyone will be up this year. It's a special year of Birkas HaChama, so every 28 years, so it's an exciting event that many of my students don't even recall when the last time of Birkas HaChama. I'm sure many people here recall the last Birkas HaChama. So it's an exciting event. So everyone will be up bright and early to say Birkas HaChama and to get rid of the chametz and to stop eating the chametz, etc. Then number seven, Zion. There's another prohibition of eating matzah on Erev Pesach, right? So you're a little stuck on Erev Pesach because chametz you can't eat in the morning hours already. Already we forbid you to eat chametz, and matzah we also forbid you to eat because we want you to, you know, when you come to the Seder, we want you to, that should be the first time you're eating matzah, or else you lose the you lose the excitement. You already had matzah and Erev Pesach. Technically speaking, the din of the issue of eating matzah is only on Erev Pesach itself. Some people have all these minhagim and things that are not technical halachas of not eating it the whole month, or from Purim, or all these things that don't have really too much halachic basis to them, but somehow they caught on in certain circles. But the real din of eating matzah is only eating matzah on Erev Pesach. Some machmir even the night before not to eat matzah on Erev Pesach. So most people, we're not going to serve matzah. It's very simple. We're not going to serve chametz in the afternoon. We're not going to serve matzah. The only question is, could you have food that has matzah meal in that food? Like you have gefilte fish, you have matzah balls, you have cookies, all these things. So certainly those that are baked with and not cooked, the ones that are baked with matzah meal, one should not eat on Erev Pesach either. So if you have cookies, today the world became anti-gebrachs because of the Hasidic influence in the world. So the Hasidim took over, and they don't eat gebrachs, so mamela, it's not as accessible. When I was growing up, half the cookies that you bought in the store were all gebrachs. Today, I don't know, it's not easy to find cookies with the matzah meal. Everything is potato starch, and so it's not so easy. So, but if you can still find it, and you still eat it, so you shouldn't eat it on Erev Pesach, because that's considered eating matzah on Erev Pesach. And there are different opinions about the poskim about eating canadles on Erev Pesach. The different opinions, so you should avoid that as well. Like a gefilte fish that has matzah meal. You should avoid all these things that are made with matzah meal, because there are opinions that all these things are included in the prohibition of eating matzah on Erev Pesach. And of course, when you do eat, you could eat other things, fruits and things like that, and the post can say, but even if you eat things that are permissible, you shouldn't fill yourself up, because still there's a mitzvah to eat the matzah b'tei avon, so you don't want to have, you don't want to eat too much on Erev Pesach. And egg matzahs as well is a question, whether you can eat egg matzahs on Erev Pesach. Usually the big issue when Erev Pesach falls out on Shabbos, this year it's not falling out on Shabbos, so we don't have as much problems. Okay, the next halacha is number 8 on page 4. Inyan lo yochal ad shetechshach. So there's we know from our practice, you know, it's the summer season now, so everyone's going to make, not everyone, but most of us make early Shabbos. We make early Shabbos, we make early Yontif, we're very into making early. But people don't want to have to come home at 9:30 and first start to eat their Suda. So the minute people have is to make early Shabbos, so that became very, very popular. But when it comes to Pesach, so the Torah says, "Va'ochlu es haPesach b'layla hazeh." It has to be b'layla. It has to be when it's mamish dark. So there's no such thing as early Pesach, no early Seder. And now, you know, used to be that they would turn the clock later in the year. Now we're already turning the clock even before Purim. So everything is late. So we're going to first come home, first start the Seder. Who knows, around 8:30, 9 o'clock, many people will first start their Seder. If you have a situation where there are elderly people and you want to start the Seder early, so you could start, if you're in that situation where there's a family that's elderly people and they, so you could start around, say Shkia is going to be around 7:28, So in a situation where there's a real need, I'm not saying, in most of the cases, it's not even going to be a question that your husband's not even going to come home to shul from shul till before 8:30 or something like that, so there's nothing to talk about. But in a situation where there's a real need, so if you start to say that at 10 to 8, for in a situation where there's a real need, then there's what to rely on. There's already 20 some odd minutes after the shkia, so even though l'chatchila we made much longer, but if there's elderly people and they really, you know, can't stay up and they want to be up for at least part of the Seder, so one can accommodate and one doesn't have to wait the longest shear to start the Seder. Of course, you have to orchestrate an earlier minyan, etc., etc., but it could be worked out. Because in the regular shuls, it's not going to be that way. It's going to take much longer, and the people are going to come home. It's going to be much later, and some people could only be up for an hour. So let them be up for an hour from 10 to 8 to 10 to 9, and they could have Kiddush and the Seder. Could do that for some elderly people. They could do the whole thing in an hour and go to sleep and have a Seder. So you shouldn't, on their cheshbon, you shouldn't make a late Seder if there are people that need an earlier time. So people with that, they can start a Seder at 10 to 8 and fulfill what they need to fulfill. And that is the din of Atcha Tafsha. But for people who are young, vibrant, and want to stay up later, so then they can start their Seder at 9 o'clock and they'll be up. You should try to finish the Seder by Chatzos, meaning the Dalet Kosos and the Hallel, by around 1 o'clock. You have to see the exact time, but 1 o'clock in the morning, around that time. You could say the Chag Gadya and the Echad Miyodeya and all those things, that you could say afterwards. That you can go till 2, 3 o'clock, whatever you'd like. But when we say the Seder ends, then we mean the Dalet Kosos, the last, the fourth Kosos, and the and Hallel, etc., and everything we say, Adiru, and all those other things, that's not, that you could say whenever you want. Okay, number 9 is Dalet Kosos. So we have a minhag that the halacha is that we have 4 kosos at the Seder. There's a machlokus between the Sfardim and the Ashkenazim. The Ashkenazim make a bracha, Bor Pri Hagafen, 4 times at the Seder. Right, anyone, most of us are Ashkenazim here, we make 4 times. The Sfardim only make twice. They have 4 kosos, but they only make Bor Pri Hagafen twice. They only make on the first kos and the third kos. Because why should you make on the second kos? You just made a Bor Pri Hagafen on the first kos. The third kos already is after benching. So after benching, you start, it's a new beginning. So that's what the Sfardim do. And the Ashkenazim have the minhag to make a bracha on each one of the Dalet Kosos. Dalet Kosos of wine. There's a discussion in the poskim whether grape juice is considered wine. Some poskim permit it, some poskim don't permit it. There's a famous Yerushalmi that says that some of the Amoraim would have the Dalet Kosos of Pesach and they would have a headache until Shavuos. So some want to say, so you see from here that you have to have wine or else you're not going to get a headache until Shavuos. Another say, no, there's no mitzvah of getting a headache till Shavuos. And if you don't enjoy, many poskim say that if you don't enjoy wine, it's going to make you feel sick. So then you could use grape juice, even l'chatchila, and you don't have to feel guilty that you're using grape juice, because technically speaking, we assume that grape juice has the same status of wine. Meaning you don't put anything in the grape juice, just pure grape juice, and you're not mechuyev. Some people feel guilty, so they pour some wine into the grape juice because they just feel that they're not doing the right thing. But according to the opinion, you can have grape juice. You can have grape juice without that is wine. Not that you have to feel guilty and pour some. It's like some people feel guilty that their romaine lettuce doesn't taste bitter, so they put some grain into the romaine lettuce because they feel, you know, guilty that this is not bitter. That's also not necessary because that's, you know, making your emotional feelings of what you think the halacha should be and incorporating it into the halacha instead of knowing what the halacha really is. And if we assume that romaine lettuce is good for tomorrow, so that's what it is. It's not what you think it should be. That's what the halacha states. And the same thing by the Dalet Kosos. If one can have wine, so be it. So it's good. And if not, there were many gedolim that used to have grape juice instead of. The question is, if you can't even have grape juice, then that becomes a question of, you know, could you have Chamar Medina? Could you have other things that are beverages that are normally served to guests? So that's a question. If you really have that question, you should ask a shayla. But once we allow grape juice, that should cover for most people. That most people will be either covered up with the wine or the grape juice. And the grape juice, you should have a cup that's at least 3.3 ounces, and you should try to drink the whole cup. If you have a very big cup, so then some poskim say that if your cup is 6 ounces, then there's some poskim that say that you have to drink the 6 ounces, or the majority of the 6 ounces. So therefore, the poskim say you should get a cup which is around the requisite shear of 3.3 ounces, so you won't get into the question of having to drink more than that. So you shouldn't have a big cup that's 7 ounces or something like that. And the halacha is that if you drink rov of the kos, if you drink the majority of the kos, then you fulfill the obligation, even though the preference is to really drink the whole kos. The preference is to drink the whole kos. And again, it's better to drink grape juice and drink the whole kos than just taking sips of wine. Sometimes people say, oh, I have to have wine, and then they'll just take a sip of wine, and then they're not really fulfilling the mitzvah because they only had a sip. They didn't drink the whole kos or the majority of the kos. So better for these people that they should have the grape juice and drink the whole kos of the grape juice or the rov of the kos of the grape juice and then fulfill the mitzvah than just taking wine and just taking a sip of the wine. The next mitzvah we have is the mitzvah of matzah, and we do Netilas Yadayim, we have Motzi Matzah, and we have matzah 3 times at the Seder. We have the matzah at the original Alachilas matzah. We have the matzah for the Korech. And we have the matzah for the Afikomen. And each time we eat at least a kezayis. Some have more than a kezayis at the Seder. And we have to eat it in a shear of Bifdei Achilas Pras. So this halacha also is misunderstood. Sometimes people think they have to eat like this huge matzah, and they only have 2 minutes to eat it, and they clock themselves, and that's only because they don't understand the halacha that they do these strange things. In other words, if you realize the amount of time Chazal give us to eat the matzah, kedei achilas pras means you only have to eat one kezayis in the time that it takes really to eat 6 to 8 kezayis. So that's a long amount of time. That's not a rushed amount of time. Whereas you eat one in the time it takes to eat 6. We're not saying eat one in the time that it takes to eat one. We're saying one in the time it takes to eat 6 or 8. It's a nice amount of time. So what the post can point out is what one should do is one should eat matzah without speaking to your friend, to your family member. Just eat normal without pause, and you'll eat it, and you won't miss the time, because if you're eating without a pause, so by definition you're going to eat in the right amount of time. Technically speaking, the shear of a kezayis is about the size of your hand. That's a way of you don't have to get these fancy sheets and these things and measuring and this and that. You know, you have a Kadosh Baruch Hu created you with a hand, and it's the size of the hand, the palm with the fingers. And that amount is a kezias. So if you want to eat a little bit more, you can eat more. There's post can say there's a mitzvah to eat more than a kezias. But so you eat that amount in the without pausing, then you've done the mitzvah. So you're going to eat that amount, and then you're going to eat it again for. And if some have a chumrah to eat two kezaisim at the beginning, but if you eat this amount, then you're okay. This the hand, and again for the korek, for the sandwich, another one, and for the afikoman, another one. And if an individual who's elderly and can't eat that much, so they could just eat, as the poskim say, the size of the palm without the fingers, and they will fulfill the mitzvah as well. If young people could eat more, so they why not? They should eat more. But people who are more elderly, they could. You should. Sometimes people feel young guys come back from yeshiva and they see that there's whole, big shiurim, and they give all the elderly people, and they think that they're not going to eat that amount, that they're terrible Jews. I remember when I was a young kid, so I used to do that. I had an elderly uncle at the Seder, and I used to give him these big shiurim. So my parents told me when I wasn't looking, he would take the matzah and put it back in the box. So that's the what we should do. We should, if you're young and you're healthy, Baruch Hashem, you could eat the size of the hand with even a little bit more. You could even eat two hands if you want, if you're young and healthy. But if individuals who are old, more, not as young, so they could just eat the one hand, and if need be, just the size of the palm, and you should eat it without talking to your next door neighbor, and then you'll fulfill the mitzvah. And again, there's no need to rush as long as you're eating it normally. You eat it normally, without pause, without discussion, and then for sure you've fulfilled your mitzvah. Sometimes people try to rush it, but that's not the mitzvah. The mitzvah wasn't to rush it. The mitzvah was to eat normally, not to speak, as I said, in the middle, not to pause, to eat it without pause, normally, and then you'll fulfill the mitzvah according to all the opinions. And that is the mitzvah of matzah, and then afikoman. And again, we should try to, if we can, we should try to fulfill our all these mitzvahs by chatzos. You'll look at the exact time. It's around 1 a.m. If something, give or take, you'll have to check. I don't have it in front of me, the exact time. But now that we move the clocks, everything is going to be, we're going to start the Seder later. We're going to end the Seder later. And of course, the major point of the Seder, Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, is the mitzvah of telling over the story of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. And I think the message that we learn from this is, you know, where did it all begin? The whole Golus Mitzrayim, where did it all begin? It all began with Yosef and his brothers, right? That's how we got to Mitzrayim in the first place. It all began with the hatred that the brothers had towards Yosef. And that's how some, Rabbi Elchanan Wasserman has his famous comment. He says why there were blood libels against the Jews, that the Goyim was saying that the Jews would take the non-Jewish people's blood and use it for their matzah and for their wine. And it was believed. It was believed. So Rabbi Elchanan Wasserman asked the question, how could it be? They made up such a lie and people believed it? There must be some truth to it. So what was the truth? The truth was because one time we did something with Yosef, that we shechted the thing and there was something. So that myth was able to take on credence by people because of the chet of Mechiras Yosef. So therefore we're constantly atoning for the chet of Mechiras Yosef. And some say we dip the karpas That's also part of the kapara of dipping the tones pasim in the blood. It all comes back to Yosef and his brothers. And I think the major lesson to learn by Yosef and his brothers is said over by Rav Yonason Eibschitz in the Sefer Teferes Yonason, where he writes that there was so much hatred and jealousy between Yosef and the brothers. So what was the issue? One pasuk, lo yochlu dabro l'shalom, that they never were able to speak it out. They never were able to communicate. So whatever resentment they had towards their brother, it just harbored inside. And then when something harbors inside that you really need to express, then it multiplies. And then the resentment, the hatred becomes worse and worse and worse. And that's how it all became, because lo yochlu dabro l'shalom. So I think the whole idea of the Pesach, when we're saying that the Pesach Seder is coming to the Mechaper to rectify the chait of Mechiras Yosef, that's why the Pesach Seder is all about Sipur. It's all about communication. It's all about speaking. The Arizal says the famous word Pesach is really two words, Pesach, which in Aramaic means the mouth speaks. It's the Arizal speaks about the Gulas Hadibur. It's all about telling Lamata Saper, Sipur Yitzis Mitzrayim, he got it to Labincho, all these things, the whole Pesach Seder is all about communication, because that was lacking in the time of Yosef and his brothers. The time of Yosef and his brothers, it was more Yochlu Dabro L'Sholom, there was no communication, and therefore the resentment just multiplied and multiplied. And that's what we have every year at the Pesach Seder. And we know that the first night of Pesach is always going to be the night what Tisha B'Av is going to be that year, right? So if it's the first day of Pesach is on Thursday, so that means Tisha B'Av this year is going to be on Thursday. So Tisha B'Av and Pesach are connected, and this is the idea that we know that the Sinas Chinam of Tisha B'Av has to be rectified on Pesach, so this way we shouldn't have to observe another Tisha B'Av. But the Atbash, there's that connection, because the chait of Mechiras Yosef was ultimately the chait of Sinas Chinam, which is ultimately the destruction of the temple, which ultimately is what Tisha B'Av is about, and it all connects into what the Seder is all about. So when we come to Yontif of Pesach, so you should realize that the holidays are a man of simcha. Sometimes people dread when Pesach comes because it's so demanding, and that's why the minhag became that half the Jewish people go to Florida, because it's so demanding and they can't deal with it. So everyone should help out and everyone should chill out, and they should all have a good Freilich and Chag Kosher V'Sameach for everybody.